Session number 27247, Rule 4.
Mr. Frank Borlée, Rule 4. Now, we were talking about your training with basically the D Company, 2nd Battalion Ox and Bucks Light Infantry, based at
Bulford.
Bulford, thank you, just slipped out of my mind there. We've talked a lot about the fitness training and about the sniping training, but at the same time, you're also doing training in gliders, and I wondered if you could take me through the various stages. I don't know whether you had to learn parachutes first or how it started, but how did they train you on gliders?
Well, the first glider trip I ever made was in a Hotspur, which took 7 to 8 people.
Now, what do you remember of that first? That'd be your first flight of any sort, wouldn't it?
That was our first flight, was in the Hotspur.
What was it like?
Which was, for a start off, it was painted yellow. And there was one pilot. It was towed by Albemarles. The plane was an Albemarles, yes. It was towed by one Albemarle, towed one glider. Our first thing was, we think we was taken up to about 5 or 7,000 feet and simply cast off and skidded into land.
Now, what was it like inside? Where were you sitting inside the glider?
We're sitting facing each other on either side, about 4 each side.
Back in the fuselage.
It was a very, very, very small glider. Very,
and
very
just
small.
One pilot up at the front.
Yes, very small glider.
And what was it like? How did it feel, the first flight? And
well, it was very, very strange. The thing that was strangest of all was when you cast off, because there was no noise other than a swish. And we came in very, very quickly. And the had no undercarriage but skids. And we just simply skidded to a halt. We immediately disembarked, is for want of a better word, and went to another part of the airfield, and we got another glider.
Same time?
Yes. But this time, instead of just going round, going up, casting off and coming down, they took us up and gave us quite a fly round. Then released us. That was on the same day. That was my first. After that,
what did you think of it? I mean, were you nervous? I mean,
I was very nervous, but I, for some strange reason, I didn't mind it at all. And I don't. When they came along and said, you know, how do you feel? Howard come and said, how do you feel about this? You know, if any of you want to make a move, now is the time. But nobody bothered to make a move, not at that particular point of time. And the next thing we know, don't know how much longer, I wouldn't like to say the period of time, but we've got to be introduced to the Hawser.
That's a much bigger one, is it?
Massive. 28. And we went to Nether Wallop Airfield. And we'd done our first flight as a platoon. The whole platoon was in the one glider. That was the officer, all of us. And the same procedure again, took us off, and we landed on wheels, on now, undercarriage.
Was there any sort of boarding and disembarkation procedure you were learning at this stage, or was this really just flight?
You got in and sat down and buckled up. It was as simple as that. Rifle between your knees, or your weapon between your knees, and just off you went. there was a bit of an eerie silence on the first one. Nobody wanted to talk.
What, in the Hotspur? Or
no, in the Horsa.
So people are still nervous.
So it was a bit umpty about this. And we went round, as I say, done the same procedure again. Then about a couple of days later, we went up and we had a lot longer flight. Then we had one night flight where we flew, as I understand, we went out across Bournemouth, Poole, up into the Porlock Hills, round, back, and down to Netheravon once again.
Now, to you, you couldn't see anything, I presume. There's
no
window.
Because it's blackout on and everything else.
But there's no windows anywhere, is there?
Yeah, it's got porthole windows.
Oh, you could see through. Oh, but, yeah. I mean, this is really training for the glider pilot as much as anybody, as well as...
Well, I was coming to that moment. And then the next thing they said to us, well, is an offer. Any of you would like to do live loads? Live loads was a glider, Horsa, part filled with sandbag for weight, and six people, and two glider pilots, because there's two in a Horsa, flying a live load for the first time without the RAF instructor. You went to and picked up an Irving type parachute to put on. That's the parachute you open with a ripcord, pull the ripcord. And if you'd done this, you would have a weekend's leave, 48 hours leave. So Corporal Jack Bailey and Gus Gardner and Paddy O'Donnell and myself, we volunteered. And we had about 3 days of this up at Netheravon once again. So we got to know gliders fairly well by then. After that, we realised they were, except for we did lose seven blokes in a Hotspur.
I'll come back to that. So you were getting used to the idea of flying. You weren't. Could you tell the difference between the new pilots and the old and the more experienced pilots?
No, not really. No, not really. Didn't have much conversation with them, although you could have done quite easily.
But you couldn't. I mean, they're flying and they're landing was
they're
okay.
They're flying and landing for the first time, you know.
It was okay.
It was okay. No bother at all. Didn't have one incident. The only incident we had was that got kitted out to shoot on, and Jack pulled Bill's ripcord, and we had a parachute all over the place on the ground before we took off. But that's the only incident we had.
Now, what about the loss of this Hotspur? Was that in your
That was second day. The day after we flew, on the second day, another company had gone there, and the glider had gone into the side of a building, which was not, of all things, an old church.
While it was landing.
And killed. Everybody was killed. The pilot and the six or seven who was behind them. Yes.
Did that worry people?
Well, we didn't know, but we didn't really get the full details for a day or two, but then when it drifted in, yes, it did. Made you think.
Now,
but who's going to pull out in front of your mates? Who's going to say, well, I'm not going to do it anymore?
Now, what's this story about Sergeant Williams and a glider? Would that fit in now?
Well, no, that came during the operation of D-Day.
Oh, that was actually on the operation. All right, we'll leave that. Sorry, yeah. Wait until we get to that. So how did the training go next? Well, I mean, so you've done the basic flights. You've started doing some live load, you know. What's the next stage of your glider training? Or is that it?
That's it. No more than that.
Did you practice debouching from the glider? You know, when it lands, getting out quickly and
well, that was normal part of the training, getting out of the glider, naturally, especially when you was kitted up.
Was there a set way of doing it? I mean, because I presume speed was of the essence. You can't sit well, around when you've landed.
There was a drill.
Tell me what the drill was.
The drill was the doors of a glider open up into the roof, slide it up back into the roof. The officer and an NCO, the officer at the top, he would stand there and they'd hold on to him and he would open the door. When the glider pilot shouted, we're coming into land. And the chap, the NCO who was at the back, he would do this. You've got two exits on that particular type of glider. There's one or two different marks, but the infantry glider, for want of a better word, had two openings. One at the front, one at the rear right, which you might say. And the object was to get out. You sat in a certain scout section, used to sit, my section, used to sit halfway down the glider, right opposite the rear door. The other two sections were at the top of the glider, and the section which was on the, how can I explain it, on the same side as the opening of the door opening, they didn't go out immediately. The other section went through first, because otherwise you'd all been, one of this lot trying to get out of here would be bumping into this lot here. We, the rear lot, and the tower unit, we went out through the rear door, being right opposite, and two of you getting out quite easily at one time on that particular door, because quite a large door, you could both get out at the same time. You didn't drop to the ground straight away. You cleared yourself from the glider, because you was taught that would be the aiming point of anybody firing at you. They wouldn't fire at you individually, they would fire at the bloody glider. So if you got caught in there, that would have been rather nasty, for the want of a better word.
And you'd practice this drill, would you?
Practice that drill. And we practiced that drill, funny enough, not only with a glider, but with an LST. You know, the troop carrying vehicle. And we used to sit in that troop carrying vehicle the same as a glider. And train getting in and getting out of that. Even used to do it standing on the barrack room square.
That was obviously an important part. Now, when you got out, what you said you were in the scout section as a sniper, I presume. What was the role of the scout section? What was the scout section's job?
Well, I can only describe to you what on that and what the landing was actually on D-Day. But well, that would explain it all.
Well, but the thing is, what we try and do is find out what you were meant to do and then what happened. What did you practice doing as scout section? Do you see what I mean? And then we'll come back.
Well, first and foremost is to get out and get in some form of defensive form, i.e. fan out. And then whatever the opposition was, to get together in your respective sections. Because you, as each section had a brigand gunner and a second in command and a platoon section commander, etc., etc., and get together to form an effective unit. But the first thing was to get well away from the glider.
So first you get out, get away from the glider, find somewhere where you were undercover.
Oh, well, you do that naturally. You've been trained so often.
And then what would the scout section do? What was your job? I mean, the answer could be scout.
Well,
I mean
to be in front. To be in front of the other two sections. That was your job. To get out front.
And feel your way. Feel your way
forward. Yes, find out where you are, what you're going to do. Jack would have the map, or whatever the instructions was. He would have all that information. And off we would go from there.
Now, you'd practice this. Would you you practice getting out of the glider. Would you practice sort of the next stage, you know, of this taking up positions, going forward, the scout section, feeling the way forward? Would you practice that as well?
Well, Well, not so much practice. That would be natural, wouldn't it? You know, we've done all these sort of things so many times.
In normal training.
Training, that you would just, it'd be the norm.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, what about tactical training? How much tactical training have you done? You know, methods of advancing, taking up defensive positions, digging in. How much training on that side of thing have you done?
Well, we've done hell of a lot of that sort of thing. Hell of a lot of it, digging in. And we'd also done that with on live ammunition ranges.
Tell me, what sort of thing would you do?
Well, you'd be under command. You'd be under your command from the platoon officer. Well, he was telling you what to do. You wouldn't be doing what you wanted to do. You'd be telling you what his instructions were, whether you want to advance something or whether you've got to consolidate with somebody else, whatever the instructions were.
But what's
Howard?
What I mean is, I understand you'd be under orders, but what would you do? I mean, what kind of live firing exercises would you do? Or what would a live firing exercise be like?
Well, you would be told about the object you're hoped to capture or achieve on the course. It might be a hill, might be a wood, might be whatever it may be. And your platoon officer would come forward with you, and you would be laying in a concealed position, naturally. And he would say, well, I want you to advance to that point there and give us cover in fire. If required, well, we will go to sections one or section two. We'll go to this point here or that point there, so you know where everybody is. And when you get in these position, number one section will come up to you, or number two, and then you will go on farther. And this is sort of a leapfrog effect. Best way I explain it, right?
And what sort of live firing would you be under?
When you come to these were fixed lined. I don't know whether they were Vickers or whether they were Brens, or they were probably Browning. It's probably the Browning, American Browning, I would think.
And was it just overhead? Or
yes, overhead. You just had to keep flat on the floor. Mustn't stand up. Under no circumstances stand up.
Any explosions? You know.
Well, these were mostly done by Bakelite grenades, wouldn't they? They used to throw the Bakelite grenade or
the percussion grenades.
Yeah, the one with the old ribbon on it.
And how realistic was it?
Well, to us it was very, very realistic because we knew that it could be bloody fatal.
In retrospect, how realistic was it? To what it was like when you actually went into action?
Nothing like.
Not as bad?
Not for me anyway.
So you do these tactical training life. What about other weapons? I mean, you've said just to finish the weapons. We'd mentioned that you obviously don't.
Well,
I
can tell you what the weapons of a platoon would be. The weapon of the platoon would be that you would have a scout section which consists of two riflemen, two snipers, and one Bren gunner. Section 1 and Section 2 were identical. You had a lance corporal, a Bren gunner, number 2 on the Bren, 4 riflemen, and you could have the 2-inch mortar man in your section as well. 2-inch mortar man carried a pistol, 9mm Browning. Rest of the platoon would carry the ordinary shorty Enfield rifle. As I say, you had the Bren gun magazines amongst you. The number 2 on the Bren would be carrying an extra carrying pouch, which would then carry another 4 magazines. And that would be the setup.
Now, there's quite a few weapons there you hadn't mentioned in training. I mean, had you been trained in all of them?
Yes, been trained, but not to the degree of the man who was designated the weapon.
Well, let's go. What hand grenade training have you had?
We cut with 36s, mill bomb. Taught how to change the fuses if required.
For different lengths of time.
Timing length. I don't know if it's 3, 5, and 7, I think, if I remember rightly. Seconds.
And did you practice throwing them?
Yes. Yes, went to field firing ranges where you taught how to throw them. You always threw them from a trench. I never threw one out in the open, ever.
Was it still a round arm?
It was the usual round arm and over.
Did you get familiar? A lot of people are nervous of hand grenades. Did you use them enough to get familiar with them so you were confident?
No. We had an incident where somebody only threw one about 5 yards. So, good thing he wasn't a trench.
So you didn't get familiar with them, really?
No. I didn't like them.
Why didn't you like them?
Just something about a grenade I didn't like.
You didn't feel confident with it?
No, I never carried them.
It was optional, was it?
No, it wasn't part of my kit.
Now, so that's hand grenades. I mean, the other weapons you mentioned, the Bren you'd already done, did you get more Bren gun training?
No, very, very little for me anyway. But we'd been trained on that weapon so much that it was second nature to us. Absolutely second nature.
In all the units you've been
yes.
in?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And what about the 2-inch mortar?
I think I fired it once. So, I think I fired it once.
I fired
the pier about 5 times.
What do you think of that?
Terrible.
What was terrible about it?
Already killed one of our officers before when we was in training. The thing come back and cut him across, Lieutenant Deacon cut him across the neck there and he bled to death.
So that didn't engender a lot of confidence?
No, didn't it? No, but in action that wasn't true. It was quite, it served its purpose.
Now, any hand-to-hand combat, because you were a specialist, you know, sort of elite troops.
Well, I've never done a lot of this, what you see, this rolling about and grabbing people by the helmet and cutting their throat and all that. I never done a lot of that. I didn't think, anyway, I knew it was nonsense anyway.
So I
thought it was nonsense.
So you weren't trained in that? Now, you were with the unit quite a while before D-Day.
Yes.
I mean, any other incidents or training or things that you recall before that? You know, the sort of, because you're sort of nearly 3 years.
Yes.
You were at Bulford all that time?
Yes.
Had a
short spell with the American Army, but that was later on.
After D-Day?
No.
No. What comes first then? What's the first thing you remember? We talked about training generally. Are there any events or things that you happened before?
We used to do a lot of being dropped off in the middle of the night, not knowing where we were. And you've got to make your own way or find your own way to a certain point, given a map reference, and used to work from map reference. We used to work in pairs. I always used to drop off with Jack Bailey, and we used to...
Did you enjoy those, or were they a challenge?
We used to give them okay. Give them okay. Not greatly worried about them.
So you'd obviously develop skills with compass,
yeah.
Maps, the rest of it.
Oh, yeah, the old map reading and map work, yes. Mostly six-figure map reference work.
And what else? What you know, we're just going through now towards D-Day, what are the various things that you remember from your training period, events or things that happened?
Well, you see, to me it was just army training, wasn't it?
Well, let's look at this attachment to the Americans. What was that about?
Well, we had 4 of them come to us, our platoon, and 3 of our platoon went over to their unit.
Now, did you go to them?
Yes. It was the 101st American Airborne, Tibworth.
Now tell us about that, because we're, you know, we don't get much chance to talk about Americans.
Well, we went there. We was there for 3 weeks. 3 weeks or a fortnight, quite sure. And first thing we found on was what they called a hike, which turned out to be a route march, where everybody marched in there. What's strange to us was a march single file, and everybody at their own pace.
And what did you think of that?
I had a job to think. How do I put this?
Don't just say what you think. It doesn't matter. I mean, do you think it was inefficient? Or better?
I thought they were so poorly trained, it was unbelievable.
In what way?
Well, when we had our so-called hikes and exercises, they'd done so many things that we knew was wrong, i.e. they were skylining themselves. They didn't seem to have any knowledge of that sort of thing. And instead of having instructions, all you could ever get was, let's go, let's go. And to us, it was all quite nice. The chappy I befriended there, very nice guy. He described me. He told me that he'd never been so well fed, so well clothed, and so well paid in all of his life. So there was something for some of them somewhere.
So you got on all right with them, but you thought they were badly trained.
Yeah, I got on all right. I thought they were very... we went to a place called Stonecliff Camp whilst I was with them. And that was for a swimming course, if I remember rightly. And I was amazed to see how many of them couldn't swim. You know, you visualise that Americans and seasides all went together, but there was... all different, for want of a better word, I mustn't say the word type, but they were all different kinds of people. They didn't seem to gel like we would gel, like all being Londoners together and that. You know, they were so, when one said to me, you realise I'm closer home here than what I was in my barracks when I was in America. And he was in England.
Did you get on well with them, the Americans? I mean,
yeah, I didn't. There was no discipline of any description. Sergeants were Bill or Jack or... I mean, so if I wanted to go and speak to an NCO, I had to stand at attention and say, Sergeant, can I speak to you? They didn't. Nothing like that. Their food, well, was just unbelievable to us. When somebody opened up a bloody chicken, when somebody opened up a tin, had a whole chicken in, turned it out on my plate, I couldn't believe it.
So it's much better conditions?
Food, everything, sure.
And what did they think of you, do you think?
They thought that we was very, very hard.
In what way?
I think they had a job to fathom us out, really, in comparison to them. When they looked at our uniform and our equipment, the fact that they had semi-automatic rifles, we still had a bolt action. All their weapons were overkill. Thompson submachine gun, for instance, bloody great 45 slugs. They were supposed to be their best.
They thought you were hard. Do you mean they thought you were hard-bitten professionals or just
tough?
Yeah,
they couldn't make... When we told them some of the things we had to do, like sleeping out with just a gas cape to put on you, you know, they couldn't... When I said we'd marched 143 miles in 3.5 days, they just... Like a lot of people, not only them, a lot of English people, just called us liars.